Hi, this is Perry, and you're listening to The Beauty Brains, episode 97. Hello, and welcome to The Beauty Brains, a show where real scientists answer your questions about beauty products. I'm cosmetic chemist Perry Romanowski, and with me today, right off the pages of Allure magazine, Randy Schuler. How's it going, Randy?
It's going well, Perry. Thank you. I should point out I was not on the cover of Allure. I was like on page 727 or something. But yeah, thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm starting to get a bit jealous with how much attention you're giving the folks over at Allure. I mean, are you starting to draw a paycheck from them or something?
No comment.
Well, have fun with all those samples or something, right? All right, well, we have a really big show for you today. This is one of our beauty science news programs. Later, you're going to learn whether vitamin B supplements are causing acne, if your face gets more red when you ovulate, and whether foods have been proven to make your skin and nails thicker. But before we get into that, I thought we'd cover this article I saw on Redbook about the beauty hacks that people are posting on Pinterest and whether they're a good idea. Did you see that article I was talking about?
You know, I didn't. I don't really read Redbook. I like Allure much better.
Nicely done. Nicely done. Well, this article in Redbook, you're familiar with Pinterest, of course.
I did see the article, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, for the audience, this article just went through 15 Pinterest beauty hacks that are actually awful for your skin. And they went through, to their credit, they went through and found a dermatologist to talk to about these things. And they got their advice about whether it was a good idea to do these things or not. And actually, over the time of the Beauty Brains, we've talked about some of these different kinds of things, but I thought we'd go through and see what the dermatologist said, because the dermatologist might not be presenting the most accurate information either.
Well, I was kind of surprised by this, you know, when you suggested we talk about this on the show, because it's exactly the type of myth-busting thing we would do to say, look, you know, these natural ingredients or natural hacks aren't necessarily as good as people think. And it's sort of like, oh, great, Redbook has beat us to the punch, and they've gotten some dermatologists and have given their assessment of this. But upon reading it, yeah, I thought, I don't necessarily agree with everything the derms said. So I think it'll be really interesting to go through a few of these and kind of compare our thoughts to what the dermatologist told Redbook.
Yeah. Well, the first one was a do-it-yourself fruit mask.
Right.
And they talk about the acidity and how that can work, but the dermatologist says that, you know, if you want an acid peel, you should go to the professionals. And that's pretty much what I would agree with, though. I mean, these acid peels you're going to get from putting citrus or kiwis on your face, that's not going to be nearly as effective.
Well, yeah, the amount of acid in fruits and the strength of that acid isn't really enough to do much. So I agree with that. What struck me as odd about this one was the dermatologist said something about that low pH will disrupt acid mantle on your skin. It's usually the other way around. It's the high pH materials, like using, you know, a strong alkali soap on your skin, which will really disrupt the acid mantle. Bringing the pH down a little bit more with a weak acid, I doubt would have much of a detrimental effect at all.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, maybe you could impact some of the skin bacteria negatively, but not nearly as damaging as raising the pH.
Yeah, exactly.
Then there was a suggestion to use cooking oils as moisturizers, which reminded me of that story we did a long time ago about people using making skin products out of, like, the fryer oils at McDonald's or something.
Well, right, but they were doing, you know, processing to turn those oils into surfactants. This is just, you know, take olive oil out of your cabinet or canola oil or what have you and slather that on your skin.
Right, and, you know, some of these oils are comedogenic, so that's not such a great idea.
Well, it's just that it's not optimal, and again, the rationale of the dermatologist was a bit puzzling. They said that these cooking oils wouldn't work because they wouldn't penetrate into skin deeply enough to work. Well, that's not really how moisturizers work. If it's a good occlusive agent and it can seal moisture in the top layers of skin, it doesn't have to penetrate deeply to do that. So I agree that it's not going to work particularly well, but I disagree with their reasoning that it's because it penetrates poorly.
And I think that's the thing about all of these beauty hacks, right? Anything you could do at home is going to be a sub-optimized way of doing what a cosmetic chemist has put together in a lab. I mean, when we're creating cosmetic products, we would look at technologies that maybe you find in your kitchen, and we take the best parts of that and then make those into products. You can refine these oils to make them work better and make them feel better. They're not being refined when they're delivered to you in your kitchen.
Spoken like a true shill for big chemistry.
Let's see, another one of these was creating a do-it-yourself burning your face mask.
Yeah.
That just doesn't seem like a good idea anyway.
Right, and they said the reason was because they talked about using lemon juice and cinnamon in combination.
And cinnamon,
there are allergens present in cinnamon. So yeah, probably not a good idea to put that on your skin and leave it in contact with your skin. So I would agree with that.
We have the soaking nails in oil and lemon juice to make your nails grow. I mean, I don't think there's really any huge downside to soaking in lemon juice, except maybe irritating your skin, but it's certainly not going to help your nails grow.
Right, it's not beneficial. I mean, there's some data that shows, and we talked about this on an earlier show, soaking your nails in water can leach out some of the natural materials that help moisturize your nails. So it could have a negative effect in that regard.
Yeah, it's definitely not good for your nails.
Right.
We've seen this one on our blog, the crushed aspirin, using it on your face. I mean, if you're gonna use it, you just go get some salicylic acid, right?
Well, this one really sort of set me off because the quote from the article said something like, you know, the experts, you know, talk about using, they actually mentioned aspirin, toothpaste, and baking soda as good for acne blemishes. And the quote from the article said something like, you know, the experts say that these substances contain salicylic acid. Well, they don't, first of all. So first of all, toothpaste and baking soda don't contain salicylic acid at all.
No.
And aspirin contains beta salicylic acid. So it's not in the same form. It's acetylsalicylic acid. So it's not the same form. And when you ingest aspirin, it's metabolized and broken down into salicylic acid. But when you just put it on your skin, the enzymatic conversion of that from acetylsalicylic to salicylic happens very slowly. So why would you bother using a very inefficient version of it when, as you pointed out, you can just get a cream with sal acid in it and it'll work perfectly fine. So there's really no benefit to that. And the advice that they all contain sal acid is just plain wrong.
Right. Petroleum jelly to grow your lashes. I like petroleum jelly. It's a great moisturizing ingredient, but it's not going to grow your lashes.
I could go for a good petroleum jelly and peanut butter sandwich right now, but
you know, in looking through this, I was impressed that they didn't have used crayons to make your own lipstick. <'Cause> I was at a party at my sister's house, and my niece, who's 14 years old or something, she said she read on the internet that you can use crayons to make your own lip gloss, and that's what she was doing, I had to set her straight on that. I'm like, with all of these things, though, how much money are you really saving if you're going to use aspirin? It costs you money to buy aspirin anyway. You might as well just go get a product with sal acid in it that actually is formulated properly.
I guess. I mean, and then there's just the fun of doing something yourself. I get that, but you know, anyway, back to the list.
Yeah.
By the way, tell your frickin' niece to listen to your podcast because we discussed that exact subject about using crayons. So tell her to pay attention.
Oh, you know, those tweens aren't in the podcast yet. But she will be. What else do we have here? We have, the dry shampoo one, making your own dry shampoo.
Well, this one was odd to me because they said, well, watch out for these oils in dry shampoos because they can cause acne and I think, you know, irritate your skin. But oils are just the fragrance component of dry shampoos. Like, they didn't mention what I would consider to be the real problem with making your own dry shampoo, which is, you know, the difficulty in getting uniform powder delivery. Like when you get a well-formulated aerosol powdered system that sprays powder on your hair very finely, so right. You know, you get the right surface area of the powder on your hair, you can brush it through easily, it's well distributed. That's how dry shampoos work when they work well. If you're just taking a handful of, you know, cornstarch or whatever you're using at home, and you're just like mashing that into your hair, I mean, that's just going to make a mess.
Yeah, this, I mean, in a pinch, I guess, if you just want to put it on your head.
But, again, it's not optimal.
Yeah. Right. With all of these things, you could get a, it's going to cost you just as much money to get your fragrant oils and your powders than if you would have just bought your own dry shampoo.
Well, and then did you see, I don't know, which one were you going to cover next? Because I have another pet peeve coming up.
We can go with the one you were going to talk
about. The
one
about using Vaseline petroleum jelly as lip balm. And the derm right. said, quote, this will definitely cause breakouts around your lips. Right. What the? Where's that information come from?
That was the worst. I mean, hell, most of these things are made up of petroleum jelly, right? These lip balms.
So that made me see. Clearly. I feel bad because I think a lot of times we come off, whenever we discuss dermatologists' input to cosmetic products, we tend to come off as bashing the derms, as not knowing what they're talking about. But I think this article, you know, does give you some very concrete examples where their advice doesn't really line up with what the best cosmetic science says.
Right. And the worst part is that these reporters don't know.
Right.
The media doesn't know. And, you know, consumers don't really know either that dermatologists might not be up to date, the most up to date on cosmetic technology.
Right. I mean, if I would, you know, if I had a concern about a mole that I thought I might be cancerous, you bet I'm going to go talk to a dermatologist. But when it comes to completely understanding ingredients in cosmetic formulas, I'm not sure that's the place to go. And frankly, I would read Allure magazine, I think, for some of these answers.
Well, you make a good point, because at least they are talking to people who make cosmetics and know something about the technology. And, yeah. So there you have it. There are 15 beauty hacks that Red Book had said that are awful for your skin. They remain awful for your skin, but maybe not for the reasons that these dermatologists had said.
There you go.
So the bottom line is that just because you see something posted on Pinterest, that doesn't mean it's a good idea. You know, some of these beauty hacks are doing nothing more than really hacking up your skin and hair. Stick to the professionally developed products. You know, anything that will work at home will have already been taken by a cosmetic chemist, made better, and then sold as a product to you.
Ah, well said.
All right. Before we get into today's beauty science news, I wanted to tell you about this new book I started reading today.
Oh, yeah? What's that?
And when I say reading, I mean listening to.
Of course.
Because, of course, I like to listen to books while I'm out running or doing my sit-ups and push-ups. It's just a much more efficient use of my time. Right now, I'm listening to a book called The Canon, which is a whirligig tour of the beautiful basics of science.
Did you just use the word whirligig?
Well, she used it in her title, yeah. But it's pretty good, actually. It's an excellent primer on the bare bones of what you need to know about science and why you should even care. And so this is really good for, like, our beauty brains audience. You might, you know, we are scientists. Of course, we already love science, but mostly people don't like science, right? It's that boring subject. Right. I think little kids like science. And actually, if you go to museums, right, museums are always, like, filled with little kids, and they love all the science
stuff. They still have that sense of wonder about things.
Yeah. But then when you get into, like, high school, science is like, oh, that's where all the nerds go, right?
Well, and it's also, you know, it's a lot of hard work to do it correctly, and, you know, sometimes people don't get graded so well on that work.
Right. Which is unfortunate, because I think that gives the general public sort of a negative view of science, or at least learning about it. So this book actually does a good job of making it interesting to everybody.
Yeah.
So now you can listen to this book while you exercise or clean the house or even mow the lawn, because the Beauty Brains have teamed up with Audible.com to offer a deal to our listeners. Right now you can sign up for 30 days and you get a free audiobook that will help support the Beauty Brains. So by signing up for this 30-day trial, you get the free audiobook, and then you can cancel it at any time. So you can do this by going to audibletrial.com/beautybrains, and then just sign up and download your free book. And if you don't like it after 30 days, feel free to cancel.
And we'll put that link in the show notes so you don't even have to remember it.
All right, on to beauty science news. All right, Randy, you want to kick us off with the first story?
Yeah, I'll take the first story. It's I think it's always interesting when we find scientific studies that give results that are counterintuitive. So, for example, here's a study that seems to suggest that moisturizing skin may lead to deeper wrinkles. Certainly not what we would expect to find, right?
The advice that we have for everyone is that they should moisturize frequently, right?
Well, let me explain, and there's a little confusion behind this one, but maybe you can help me figure it out. So this was a study published in the Journal of Clinical Anatomy, and they looked at the difference between wrinkles on the forehead versus those around the outer edge of the eye. Now, they studied 100 cadavers, which I thought was kind of an interesting study for wrinkles. I haven't seen too many studies on cadavers. And they found that the wrinkles around the eye, on average, were deeper than those on the forehead. Now, that was the first point of confusion, because I think when you sort of furrow up your brow, those forehead wrinkles are pretty deep, right? So maybe they're talking about not those lines of expression, but just minor wrinkles. I'm not sure. But anyway, that's what they found. Now, the article actually appeared on the Cosmetic Design website. I know you're a fan of their material.
We love Cosmetic Design.
We do love Cosmetic Design. And they concluded, in their summary of the story, they concluded, and I quote here, "The presence of oil-secreting glands and a thinner inner layer of skin may let the skin deform more easily and might be a cause for the development of wrinkles." All right, so break that down. I'm reading that as saying, okay, you've got thinner skin, which you do have around your eyes, you've got these oil-producing glands. And that makes the skin like sort of more plasticized, meaning it can sort of like fold over on itself more easily and create wrinkles. So that's what Cosmetic Design said. That's confusing right away, because then wouldn't applying moisturizer around your eye also cause more wrinkles? Because you're doing that same thing. You're plasticizing the skin more. So that...
You would think so. It is a little confusing.
And then secondly, it doesn't seem like they're taking into consideration other factors that contribute to wrinkle formation, like, you know, the collapse of collagen and elastin fibers, which is a major concern. So I found that confusing, but then I went and read the actual study and not just the article about the study. So let me...
Very thorough of you.
Let me quote the actual study here, and it says, "The findings of this study suggest that sebaceous gland density is one of the multiple factors that prevent wrinkle deepening," and so on and so on and so forth. So I'm wondering if Cosmetic Design just misquoted the article, because it seems to me those are saying two opposite things. The study itself says the oil glands help prevent wrinkle deepening, which is what you would expect. I mean, that's what moisturizing would do, right? You're adding oil to the skin.
Yeah.
So anyway, I found that a little confusing. If any of our readers want to do a half face test and apply eye cream to one side of their face and not the other, and then, you know, measure their wrinkles, we'd love to see those results. But in the meantime, I find myself just a little perplexed by this whole article.
I'm just wondering where they got 58 bodies for studying cosmetics.
We don't ask questions like that.
There was actually a book that I listened to. It was called Stiff, which was about what happens to human bodies, if you're interested in that sort of thing.
Oh, wow.
Which some people are.
Okay.
Well, a fascinating story, and it's good to know that all that moisturizer that we've been making and pushing all these years isn't really actually making things worse. Hey, Randy, I saw this story, which is kind of interesting. Would you ever spray living bacteria on your face to make it cleaner?
Spraying bacteria? Nah, that's crazy. Who would do that?
Well, that is what the makers of Mother Dirt hope consumers are going to do. They've just launched a new line of cleansers that contain live ammonia-oxidizing bacteria. It is supposed to be a skin biome-friendly cleaner that cleans your skin and hair without harming the bacteria that's already on your skin. So they say that you need to protect your biome by first restoring the beneficial bacteria, and then second, by using only products that are compatible with skin biome. the centerpiece of this new line of theirs is this thing called the AO Plus Mist, which is the stuff that contains the live bacteria you spray on yourself.
So this is the same stuff we talked about, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks ago from that company AO Biome, but their take on it was a like a natural deodorant, I think. Or no, that one, or was that for acne?
No, it was, you're right, it was a deodorant or a cleanser. This, actually, about 6 months ago, this technology got some news. I think it was some university, MIT or somebody, had come out with this way to, you know, wash yourself with bacteria. This looks like a an actual introduction of a product using that technology. Okay. So the technology, they say, is that this bacteria, the ammonia oxidizing bacteria, you spray it on your skin and then the bacteria will just live there and then feast off of your body's own sweat and oil and keep you cleaner. So that's why you have to spray the bacteria onto your skin. And then they say that their shampoo and cleansers have been formulated, tested, and screened for compatibility with your skin biome. Now, I wonder what that means. That just sounds like marketing speak to me, right? Like, how are you going to specifically formulate and test and screen formulations to be compatible, whatever that means, with your skin biome? Does that mean you don't kill it or you don't remove it? Or I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, I guess the idea is this is like how probiotics work, right? They inhibit the growth. So you let the good bacteria grow and flourish, and that growth inhibits the pathogenic bacteria. Right. So maybe they did that, right? They did the check to make sure when this stuff grows on your skin that it inhibits the harmful stuff from growing, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. I just think you'd be hard-pressed to prove in the lab that if you took a shampoo and you washed it using one type of shampoo versus another type of shampoo, you could show much different in the skin microbiome.
Well, yeah, if you're talking about shampoos, but this is a case where you're actually applying another culture to skin, right?
Right, but what they say is that these formulas are specifically compatible with your microbiome. And that's the part where I just don't see how you could prove that. Okay. So I don't know. Another interesting approach is that they claim that they don't use preservatives in these products. So what they've done is they put an expiration date printed on every bottle. Hmm. Now that's a little unnerving for me. I mean, they are probably right that if you have a preservative in your product, preservatives will just kill microbes, so it doesn't really matter which one they are, good or bad. And so it's probably true preservatives would have a negative impact on your skin microbes, but whether people should go out and use products that have no preservatives in it, I just don't think that's a good idea.
Right.
So I don't know. This sounds pretty gimmicky to me, but we'll see if people are ready to embrace putting bacteria on their faces and skin. I know my wife is not ready to start bathing in bacteria.
I did check my notes, and we did a couple of shows talk about the ammonia oxidizing bacteria because it's in a phase 2 clinical trial as a new acne drug. So that was the reference before. So anyway, we'll see.
Well, these marketers seem to be jumping the gun on.
Well, they're not making any drug claims, so they can kind of do whatever they want, I guess.
Exactly.
All right. Hey, I am super excited about this next story. Would you like to know why?
Yeah. Why is that?
Because it may solve a long-standing mystery on the Beauty Brains program, which is how you are able to detect when a woman is ovulating.
Get out of here.
So, you know, I mean, that's one of your superpowers, and we've talked about this before on the show, but maybe can you just quickly explain to people, you know, what happens? Just give them the brief version.
I don't know what it is, but if I'm at a party or something and I'm talking to a woman, I can tell where she is in her ovulation cycle.
All right. Well, and in the past, you know, we've speculated maybe this is something, you know, you're picking up on pheromones or some body odor sort of thing. Who knows, right?
Because usually they have to, like, breathe on me and then I can tell.
Right. But here's a completely different explanation of how your superpower could work. Now, there have been previous studies that showed men find women's faces more attractive when they are fertile. But the most recent study discovered something that we did not know before, and that is the fact that women's faces get slightly more red when they're ovulating.
Really?
Yeah, now here's the catch. That increase in redness is not perceivable by the human eye. So I assume they measured it instrumentally. So it's below our threshold of visual acuity, apparently. So my thought is that your superpower is to be able to see into that part of the red spectrum than other people. So you're picking up on this, you know, sub-visual redness, and that you sort of subconsciously realize what's going on. I don't want to overanalyze this, but I do think it's important to understand how your power works, because if you ever use it to become a supervillain, this might suggest a way that we could defeat you. You know, it's kind of like how Batman keeps a small supply of kryptonite around just in case Superman ever has to, you know, he has to take him down if he goes bad.
Yeah, Batman actually has a way to kill all of the superheroes, in case.
So this is our protection against you. So if you ladies in the audience are ovulating and you're going to be around Perry Romanowski and you don't want him to know it, I would suggest wearing a foundation with a little bit of yellow color, because that will counteract the redness and mask the fact.
I think you might be onto something, unless my power is more chemosensitive.
I'm just throwing this out as a possibility.
There you go. Then maybe just a lot of garlic. I was reading through a discussion board about skin the other day, because that's what I do in my spare time. And I saw somebody posed an interesting question about scars. And specifically, this commenter wanted to know, why do scars stay visible for so long? If the skin is constantly regenerating, why don't they just heal up? So I thought that would be an interesting topic to just talk about, because I have a few scars. You know, like growing up in the country, that you get those
like emotional scars.
Well, we all have those. No, I'm talking about actual scars. You know, I thought it would make a good stand-up bit if you could. You get up and you tell stories about how you got all your scars.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Because everyone's
that's
got scars.
That's a great idea.
Well, if anybody over at the Moth Podcast is looking for stories. Well, anyway, let's talk about scars. To understand why scars stick around, it's helpful to know how skin grows, right? Pretty much everything on the outer layer of your body, your skin, is dead. I know a lot of people think like skin is this nice living
right.
thing. No,
right. No,
the outer layer is all dead, just like your hair is all just dead tissue.
Right.
Skin just happens to be dried out skin cells. Now, this is the level of the skin called the epidermis, as we've talked about before, but the outer layer is called the stratum corneum, and that's where the deadest of the dead are. But below the epidermis is the dermis, where all the living skin tissue resides.
Right.
And this is where the skin cells and stem cells are, and they continually divide and grow, and they kind of push out and get into the dermis where the cells die. So anyway, this cycle just continues. So when you get a scar, so a lot of times when you get a scratch, it's just in that epidermal layer, and a scratch will just kind of go away. That's why your mosquito bites, unless you scratch them too much, they pretty much just disappear.
Right.
But what a scar is an injury that goes all the way down to the dermis. And what happens is that the body tries to quickly heal that by just injecting a whole bunch of unidirectional collagen in to fill it in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so essentially, so instead of filling the skin with skin cells, it's filled with collagen, which has a lot of different properties than just normal skin. And then as it heals, that collagen doesn't necessarily go away, especially if you've like picked the scab or something. And what you're left is with just a big plug over a hole in your skin. And then the normal skin cells, as they grow, they can't push through that skin, that collagen. What they do is they grow around it. And so that way, your scar just stays there for a very long time. Now, I should note that scars, they can go away over time. And a lot of ones maybe that you got as a kid, they kind of have gone away. But some scars, you know, they just never do go away, because it's just the damage is too extensive.
Interesting. You know, I think a good topic for a future episode might be, you know, how well those scar-removing creams work, if they work at all. I know there's some data to suggest that certain actives can be helpful. So I think we'll save that discussion for another day, but I think that would be a good show.
Well, I should mention that when I cut my nose off with a chainsaw, I had that...
Yeah,
facial disfiguring scar that I have. The doctors, they did a process, a number of times they did this process called dermabrasion.
Right.
And so there is some benefit to scraping off that some of that collagen that's on the outer layer, and that's going to help the skin push up. But, you know, even good dermabrasion isn't going to save your facial modeling career, which, you know, sadly happened to me.
Well, I'll tell you what, promise me that you will tell us the complete story about cutting your nose off with a chainsaw when we do our scar product episode.
Yeah, look forward to that. All right, I think we have time for one more story, Randy.
All right, and let me ask you this, Perry. What's the one type of ingredient that we have found that everybody loves to have in their cosmetic products, right? When we would test a new concept for a new product, if you said, you know, the product has this type of ingredient in it, people would always say, yeah, I'll buy that. What is that type of ingredient?
All you have to do, it doesn't matter what it is, all you had to do was say the word vitamins.
Right, vitamins. So, you know, shampoos and conditioners, skin moisturizers, even acne products, people want vitamins, right?
Vitamins are universally loved.
Okay. They are, but they shouldn't be necessarily.
Really?
Yeah, here's a study that shows that vitamin B may actually cause you to have more acne.
What?
Yeah, so here's how this works. This is according to the paper, vitamin B12 modulates transcriptome of the skin microbiota in acne parthenogenesis. And apparently the researchers found that B12 alters the way that certain genes behave in facial bacteria. You know, we were just talking about the natural flora and fauna of your skin, right? So you've got this bacteria in your skin. Now, I wasn't able to access the complete paper, so I can't give you the exact mechanism. But I assume it has something to do with the genes of the P. acne bacteria, which are the ones that contribute to comedone formation, and those get infected, and boom, you have pizza face. So I guess the idea is that bacteria doesn't affect everybody the same way. So you may have completely healthy, blemish-free skin, even though you have that bacteria on your skin. But mm-hmm. if you take a vitamin B12 supplement, then the genes of these bacteria are expressed differently, and it can lead you to having zits.
Oh,
so yeah, wow. So B12 can actually be bad for you in that regard. Now, the study was only on ingested B12 as a vitamin supplement. I didn't see any research on topically applied creams. But there are numerous skin lotions that contain vitamin B12. It's also known as cobalamin.
Right.
So, I don't know, but if you know people have acne concerns and you either take vitamin B12 as a supplement or you use vitamin B12 creams, you may want to try and back away from that for a while and see if your skin clears up.
Right. This study suggests that maybe you shouldn't be doing that.
At least it's a possibility. So I thought that was interesting.
Right. Yeah, it was. And, vitamins aren't always good. All right, let's finish up with this story about whether certain foods can help make your skin and hair stronger. That was published in health.com. I wonder how they got that domain, health.com. Anyway, I only bring this story up because this, like that Pinterest story, has quotes from a dermatologist saying things that, you know, I don't quite agree with. So anyway, in this story, we're not going to go through this too much in depth, but they posed the question about whether certain foods can help make your skin and hair stronger. And just some of the stuff that was said, I just found appalling. I mean, the thing that was most troubling, of course, is that's being said by a doctor who was the director of cosmetic and clinical research. For example, they say that, you know, a good way to boost your hair growth was to eat whey protein.
That.
Now the dermatologist says that your hair needs protein to grow, and so, but it misses the point that your body doesn't know. You know, you don't eat whey protein and then it goes right to your hair. It goes into your stomach. Protein gets broken down into the constituent amino acids, right, and then it gets distributed. So the type of protein you use, that pretty much isn't going to matter, right?
Well, you have to have the right balance of amino acids for all metabolic functions. And, you know, most of those things, you know, some of those your body makes, some are essential fatty acids that you need to get through your diet. But unless you're extremely malnourished, you have plenty of those building blocks in your body to grow your hair. So taking a little bit more whey protein isn't going to help.
Yeah, I think and then there's a suggestion to use blueberries, which have antioxidants, which they're suggesting that it's going to decrease the hormone inflammation in the body. I mean, you'd be hard. I mean, eating blueberries is good, right? Eating protein is good. But trying to specifically get some sort of effect from a food you ate onto your hair and skin, unless you're malnourished, there is no evidence that a specific food is going to specifically help hair, skin, or nails, despite what these professional dermatologists are saying.
Right, and, you know, shame on them for not, you know, reporting more evidence-based information. Like, if they had done, some sort of controlled study that indicated a certain food is good for, you know, certain hair and skin conditions, that's different. But that doesn't sound like that's what they're doing here.
Yeah. Well, I think after today's show, we're going to have to change it from the beauty brains to the derm bashers.
Yeah,
or something.
All right. Well,
no, we don't mean to disparage all dermatologists. Dermatologists are great people, most very knowledgeable. But and I also have to say that sometimes you, as a professional, when you get asked questions by the media, sometimes they take their answers and they sort of box you into what they want you to say, and maybe you accidentally say something that doesn't completely reflect reality.
Well, that never happens to me with Allure magazine, but I guess I understand what you're saying.
Hey, Randy, speaking of Allure magazine and other projects that we're working on, we haven't mentioned our book, It's Okay to Have Lead in Your Lipstick.
And other questions that you can ask your dermatologist.
Yeah, well, you can get a copy of that by going to our website or Amazon or wherever you can get
e-books
digital
are
books
sold.
Online.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's right. You can also follow us on Facebook. You like us there and Twitter. We have lots of Twitter followers. And someday we'll be on Instagram, too. So anyway, that's all we have today, Randy.
That's it for today's show, Perry. Thanks a lot for some scintillating news stories, and thanks to all our listeners for hanging with us through the show. So until next week, everybody, remember, be brainy about your beauty.
This isn't the first time Superman's gone rogue, so I made sure I'd be ready if it ever happened again. I always hoped I'd never have to use it.
Kryptonite.